We'll start in 3 seconds. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Microsoft BizSpark show. This is Douglas Kretz. I want to start out today's show by giving a special thank you and a get well soon to one of our producers, Corey. Corey is having his left leg amputated. No, I'm not amputated. He's actually just getting his ACL. Hold on, I got to turn off my microphone. We have microphones all over the place. And he's getting his ACL operated on, so he couldn't be here today. So we really appreciate the work that he's done, and we wish him a speedy recovery. That being said, we're very excited. This team is very excited to be interviewing a man named Scott Andrews, who's the CEO of Pixi, P-I-X-S-I. You can go find them at pixi.com. And Pixi is a social shopping startup. And Scott is coming out of the Youngstown, Ohio area. He's a BizSpark member who has a real problem with advertising and marketing as it is currently played out in the digital space. So we're going to be talking to him about Pixi and his solution. And I'd like to start by introducing or having Scott introduce himself, just saying a few words about Pixi and what it does and why he made it. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you, and hello from Youngstown, Ohio.
Thank you. Welcome.
Well,
they have startups. They have startups in Ohio, I guess. That's the first thing we should probably get out of the way. They do have startups there.
They have phenomenal startups here. In fact, just recently they were nominated and accepted as and voted as the 11th best university-affiliated incubator in the world.
Wow. That's the Youngstown Business Incubator?
Youngstown Business Incubator of Youngstown, Ohio.
Awesome. So why Pixi? Why now? Why did you make it?
Pixi helps people make simpler buying decisions. Why do we make it? The status quo of marketing is siloed, it's broken, and it's not working anymore. And marketers are wondering, why is this happening? Well, the answer is really simple. Consumers are now in control of the marketplace. Think about how we go shopping today. We now use technology and tools to research and find information where, when, and how we want to. And push marketing continues to diminish in return on investment for the marketer. What we did with Pixi, and why I created it, was let's put the consumer at the center of the marketing model, not the advertiser, not the retailer, not the brand. Acknowledge the control they already have and have been doing, and find a new way in a new era of marketing and shopping for the consumer to work directly with the brand and the retailer.
Wow.
And that was made.
That's amazing. This is something that I've been thinking about, and I've actually been talking about for like 5 or 6 years. I don't think that in the space in which we use the web, advertising actually works the way we need it to work. I mean, I've said everything from I think that advertising is boring to I think that advertising is often speaking to the wrong audiences to it's even pulling the wrong levers in terms of my emotions or my connections to a brand or whatnot. What are some of the things that you've noticed about just sort of the quality or the way that advertising is pitched to the consumer? What when you said that it's broken, what does that mean?
Well, let's talk about how we go shopping today.
All right.
We shop and we share, right? And those three components of today's modern day shopping are three siloed experiences, each one of them having advertising bolted on and pushed out to you, and you just said it. Mm-hmm. Well, therein lies the big problem. Those three are siloed experiences and fragmented. So let's change our thinking and let's think about it when we put the consumer at the center of our marketing model.
So, Doug, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, when you go shopping today, do you open up your web browser and have multiple tabs open?
Well, you know, it's funny. I actually go to a single site. I like to go to, so if I'm shopping online, I like to go to an Amazon or I like to go to a specific place that's selling a specific item. And actually, the first thing that I read are reviews, because I want to have a real understanding, almost like before I go to a movie. Did someone think that this was crap, or is this something like the next best thing since sliced bread? So for me, shopping is always about information building. Like, I need to know exactly what I'm getting, because my purchases in the past, to be frank, are like, they're not expensive items, but they're kind of big ticket items. They're things that I don't want to break, and I don't want them to perform poorly, like binoculars. I'm getting ready to go to Africa, so I wanted to buy like a GPS. I wanted to buy binoculars. I wanted to buy like a good camera lens. So the last thing I wanted to do was to sit there and buy the wrong thing. So yeah, in some aspects, I go to one site, read the reviews, but then I also open up a bunch of browsers tabs to like read what did photography magazine say, or what did this lens review site say. There's like, they're all over the place. It's like this fragmented universe. So I'm assuming Pixie must do something to aggregate all that, to put it in one place, or how does that work?
Spot on. And that's exactly how we do what we do. Is we're transforming push marketing, and we've built a massive, scalable, 100% pull marketing ecosystem.
Okay.
And we're pulling together planning, shopping, and sharing into one place. So now all that information you were just talking about, you can save it to what we call Pixie Plans, plan out your purchase, engage with retailers and brands on your terms in 100% control, and also take that information when you walk into the store. Right. How many times did you walk in the store and think, oh, nuts, what was that review?
Yeah.
How did I Google that?
You have to bring up your phone and you look through Bing, or you look through some kind of app about, oh, this, or notes. Like, I'll use an Evernote and say, oh, yeah, it's supposed to be this model number, and I can't get the small one. I have to get the large one, right? Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah. So
you got it.
Is that hard to do? I mean, you must have huge competitors in this space. I'm imagining Amazon already is a huge competitor. What differentiates you from like the all full service online catalog approach of Amazon?
Well, if you look across, I'll say, the spectrum of online experiences, period, they're using the traditional push model.
Right.
Furthermore, Amazon is an e-commerce provider selling goods and services. We're not doing that. We're here providing a shopping service to consumers to go and gather and work with Amazon. If you want to, work with Amazon and Pixie, it's up to you. We put you in control and in the center of the shopping experience. Mm-hmm. That therein lies the big major differentiator between us and pretty much everything else out there.
Right. So this wouldn't be, for people who want to get technical about this, this wouldn't actually be a shopping portal per se. Would it be more like, What kind of language would we use to describe it? Because it sounds like you're trying to aggregate people's opinions about things that we're buying, but also you're talking about aggregating together all the things that I want to buy and then making them available in one place. Is it, and clearly that it disrupts advertising, because I'm making all the selections myself about what it is I want to see. So where's the monetary return for you? If, let's be honest, like half of the more than half of the web, all of it is funded through advertising and banner ads and clicks and all that stuff.
Boy, spot on. And you really bring up, we'll get more into a little bit of the entrepreneur aspects of this. And this is very important to the incubator as well, of how companies are built. You know, mm-hmm. Most companies start out with a great idea, hurry up and build it within a year, get out there, read Lean Startup. Yeah. Which is a great book, do those kinds of things. And they come out with a good product. They get some users on it, and maybe they get some good funding, or maybe they get massive amount of users. Bless you. And what happens is they have all these users, but then how do they monetize and make money? They don't know. And what has happened traditionally is they bolted on advertising as we know it.
Right. And then advertising was sort of driving the behavior of the web, but it was also driving the way information was presented as well. So when you take advertising out of it, what do you end up with in terms of a revenue model, and also in terms of, I guess, what is user behavior like on the site? You're in the beta test. I think you launched out of stealth about in July. You've been working on it for about 3 years as of last month. in your early beta use testers, what are you noticing about their behavior? What is it they use that website to do?
The key word here is plan. Over 84% of online shoppers today use the internet to research and plan their purchases before they walk into a store, before they go ahead and pull the trigger on that purchase on a website. We do a lot of researching and planning, and that's what Pixie was here to provide as a service. We're here to help you plan out your purchases. If you look at the working mom right now, what is she trying to do? She wants to get that meal within her budget that feeds her family with the best nutrients and things like that. She's planning out her purchases and stretching her dollars. That's what we're here to do. We're here to help families thrive through Pixie.
And so I guess you're interjecting within that planning recommendations about the things that she can buy based on what her friends and her social network or her social circles are telling her is good for those things.
You got it. Right. Online marketing. Okay. I mean, she can share it from right there to any social network. Furthermore, we're going to provide direct access to brands and retailers to pull information and add to her planning capability to make sure, again, she's meeting her budget and meeting what she needs.
But this takes a long time. I want to go back to your earlier point. You know, usually because the structure of the web is built a lot on advertising or click revenue and stuff like that, or registrations or subscription revenue, most people think, I think, you know, and this is something to test your incubator knowledge, right? They think if we can just get a huge product done very fast and get a bunch of users, then we solve the problem later through advertising. Let's bust that myth. What is it like to really build a company without having to rely on that sort of go-to method, which is either to go for VC investment or angel investment or revenue through advertising? The obvious issue here is that it takes a lot longer than just shipping something immediately and seeing if it works, right?
Yes.
Can you take us through some of the steps that you had to be mindful of as you were building a team, as you were building the product, and as you were getting the kind of resources together to build it?
Mm-hmm. So the way, the proper way we believe to build out companies is you come up with a great idea, research it, check with people who would actually use it. I remember walking around in some malls and some other places and walking out to people with just screenshots and saying, would you actually do this? Would this solve your problem as a consumer?
Really?
Yeah. Talk to the people who would actually use it. Start there. After that, you start to think, broaden out the feature set. And furthermore, and this is the most important part, think about how the company is going to make money and sustain itself over the long term, not the short term.
So, you know, Stephanie Palmieri is a principal at SoftTech VC. She was our guest in the studio last week. She said that you have to be able to think at least 18 months ahead. Has that been true for you? And when you've approached people, I don't know if you've approached people for funding. What has your experience been like if you have done that? Do you have to think that far ahead?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Every morning, as a founder CEO, I wake up and ask myself, okay, Lord, what's next? And then the next question is, why will or won't this work?
Mm.
And in 18 months or a couple of years out, what is this going to look like, and how are we on track to getting it?
Yeah.
Your VC friend, I think, would appreciate that with build a sustainable business model and test it out.
Yeah. So is hiring a team the last thing you think about then? If you have to be thinking about resources, I'm assuming, I know this to be true, when I'm working on a project, the labor costs and the cost of hiring new employees is pretty significant. And if I'm trying to look 18 months ahead and I don't actually have a huge capital pool put together, I might be a little wary of actually bringing people onto the team. Can you get a little personal with us? How big your team is, or have you kept yourself from hiring folks, or how do you negotiate that space?
Well, first and foremost, as a business owner, I look at it as I want to make sure that we can pay our employees from our revenues and get as close to that as possible, rather than evaporating through investor capital.
Right.
And really give their capital a chance to grow with the company when it's truly grown. So we're a team of just over 10. We've had a lot of full-time commitment to this over the last few years, from the product team to the sales team to the rest of them. The advisors just have all contributed to the idea, and it's been a wonderful constant, how can we make it better? How can we make it simpler? You know, keep plucking things out and make it so simple, it's so powerful. It's easy to catch on for the consumer, and they just get it.
So you actually don't even approach VCs then? You don't approach people for funding, or you just sort of keep those relationships in your back pocket? I mean, how does that work? I mean, to have 10 people loyal to this cause for such a long period of time, that's pretty incredible. They must really love what they're doing.
Yes. The answer is yes and yes. Yes, of course, as a young company, we're constantly looking at who would like to grow their money and approaching investors. Definitely have taken that route. But more importantly, we take an immense responsibility that they're going to be putting their money into something that is truly going to work. We've minimized as much risk as we possibly can. And most importantly, that we can pay our own bills.
All right.
So what we've done is we've had capital approach us. We've reached out to capital, and we wait until the right timing.
Yeah. And you've got also, I mean, the other secret sauce here, I guess, a little bit, is that you've got the benefit of being a BizSpark member. So you've been able to use these tools with no cost, and you're on Azure. Can you tell us about that experience? I mean, for other startup founders out there who might be weighing the cost and benefit of going from one service provider to another, or working with Microsoft actually in that partnership as a startup, has it been helpful to you? And any advice you'd like to give about that?
Sure. And I'm going to start this out with a big heartfelt, thank you to Sunil Mani.
Yes.
Who's been phenomenal. Phenomenal help with us.
Yeah, if Sunil is watching, she's the Chicago startup evangelist that you guys met. You guys met together, and she loves your idea. So big thank you to Sunil.
Yes, so we'll start there. And the Microsoft relationship has been just awesome for us. Specifically, technologies were not pushed; they were presented. And furthermore, when it comes to business development, how can we, Microsoft, help you get to market? How can we help you with PR? How can we help you? So most people, when they talk to me about this program, they assume that it's exclusively technology, but it's not. So the Microsoft BizSpark program has been immensely helpful. As far as Azure goes, we're so far extremely impressed with its stability and security.
Mm-hmm.
As we were presented its capabilities worldwide, that was a requirement for us. We needed something that we could scale up and scale down as necessary. We needed worldwide reach as we look at what the problem Pixie is solving is a worldwide epidemic at the moment. We need to be able to get out there, and Microsoft is providing us the infrastructure as well as an amazing platform. Azure has been very stable for us, very happy with it.
That's good. And you think that over time it's going to allow you to scale properly and quickly?
Yes. Yeah, it's pretty profound.
Yeah.
Feels on a screen, and within a few minutes you've spun up a whole new set of servers, and your service can take on more users.
That's great. And I do want to get back to something that you are saying, which is absolutely true about the BizSpark program. You know, clearly it's a marketing program. I mean, no one's going to hide around the fact that it's out there to entice people to try out the Microsoft stack and to build their stuff. But the thing that you're saying is absolutely true. And Sunil, and there are many others like her around the world, is kind of key evidence of that, right? These are people who clearly have a sense of mission when it comes to working with startups. And what they're trying to do is really not only help you to grow, but they're trying to figure out, you know, what are the next steps, you know, in this entire ecosystem. You know, They're very big picture people that are trying to help this whole ecosystem get rolling and growing. So yeah, I mean, I just want to point that out. You're absolutely right. It's not just a technology program. And for when it is a technology program, one of the things that people say is, well, I don't want to just be stuck with the Microsoft stack. And the actual part of the answer to that is you don't have to, because it's open to all these technologies and it's open to all these programming languages. I don't know. Do you do any portion of open source, or are you, I mean, how's your architecture sort of laid out, or how do you program this thing?
We use a mix of Microsoft and open source technologies. But here I'll get a little techie on you.
Go ahead.
And what we'll do is, if you look at the typical startup, again, they bundle their app or their service into one big fat application, and they're writing a web application for it, and they get it out there, and let's say they do get some traffic and things start taking off. Well, then when massive scale hits, they have multiple outages, and they're not sure what to do or how to handle it, and they have to actually take apart what they made. Or in some cases, in most of the cases actually, scrap it and start over. Well, what we've done is we started with scalable proven technologies on Azure. Specifically, this is all running on Java. And we both know that Java runs a lot of the big scalable things out there today. But we're also using the SQL database as a part of it, Azure. That, again, massively scalable. So we're using a mix of both.
I think that's really interesting that you can use proven technologies to build a scalable startup, and that you're not cobbling something together and smooshing it all together to make it do or hack together some kind of solution. The second thing I'm really impressed with is that you really seem to have this solid mission to not and really truly, in the use of the word, disrupt the advertising market, the marketing market or industry, but also the shopping experience. Have you experienced a little bit of antagonism from your cohort out at places like at the big digital media agencies? I mean, in your discussions with them, what is the bone to pick with them, and like, how does that conversation go?
Stop thinking about apps. Stop thinking about digital ecosystems. Think about the consumer first. Right now, part of the buzz is everyone wants to go out and build an app. And apps are great. Very impressed with the Microsoft apps that continue to come out in the Windows Store as it's growing at a very, very good pace right now. By the way, I've been using our Surface Pro. I love it.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, we forgot to mention that you have a Surface Pro, and we can save the review for later. But go ahead. So you're saying stop thinking about apps, and does that cause tempers to flare? Like, what do you mean? Like, everybody needs an app.
Right. Well, actually, that causes a couple reactions. Number one, it's, okay, so what do I think about? And second, the question, it's, well, gee, we've already invested in this app, and I'm entrenched in the status quo. Marketers, if you're listening to this, you need to wake up. So, and you need to get out of the past. What's the future? Doug, it's mobility.
Wow, I would love to be the future. That would be awesome if I was the solution for all the market. No, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, the thing that I'm always saying, I say this on my Facebook page a lot. I say, there's two things that I really always gravitate towards. One is that digital marketers are really good when they market how to be a digital marketer. And they're not so good about convincing me to join a community or buy a thing or belong to this mission or whatever, because it seems so transparently like a push, right? It's like, you're going to tell me what to think, and then that's going to somehow hypnotize me and then convince me to go off and do something. And I think that worked when you had a lot of people sitting in front of the blue screen at night, watching the TV, and everybody was sort of focused and fixated on the same thing. And the second thing that gets a rise out of people is that I don't think that companies or even agencies are supposed to be in the business of helping each other sell stuff. I think that people can pretty much have this sort of open market mentality, and people can sell things to each other. They can sort of convince through recommendations and honesty and like guiding someone there. So I feel like that's the big threat out there. But here's the challenge to you, though. While from an academic or maybe an intellectual point of view, that might be true, how do you change consumer behavior? Because a consumer has pretty much locked and loaded their way of shopping on the web, right? Even when you asked me, I was like, yeah, I just go to one site or I try to look for reviews and then I buy a thing. So how that seems to be a big challenge for you.
Actually, it's not.
Really?
No. It's not about changing consumer behavior to do Pixie or to do this. You said, actually, we talked about this in the beginning of the interview. You're already doing it. You're out there and pulling information when and where and how you want to. We're simply facilitating it all the more. Mm-hmm. And we're meeting you where you live because we started with the consumer. So we're the answer is to adapt to the consumer, give them the control, they acknowledge the control they've had. And once that happens, for example, let's say as you're starting to use Pixie and start to plan out your purchases and starts to happen, and you go ahead and invite these brands and retailers to give you more content that has everything to do with what you're purchasing. And then when you're ready, you go ahead and save that to your Pixie account. Now you have what you need.
Got it.
Do you like that kind of behavior where you're in control of your shopping experience?
Now I see where you're coming from. So let's wrap up the interview with some quick fire questions. What are your sort of top line go to recommendations for anyone who's trying to start a bootstrap business?
Number one, start with God.
Yeah, I'm just gonna throw some at you and see if you like. If someone came to you today and they're in the incubator and they're like, Scott, I have this idea. What is the first thing that you talk them through? Like, you talk them off the ledge and be like, wait, think about this first.
Start with why.
Got it.
Why? Why are you doing it? Why? Okay. Why is this happening? Every great company starts with why.
This is the Simon Sinek. This is the, Simon Sinek. He has a book called Start With Why. Yeah.
I couldn't agree more with him. Yeah. With Simon in his assessment. You really do need to start with why.
Okay. Here's a second question for you. Someone is coming from another country and they want introductions to VC investors in Silicon Valley. What is the first thing that you'd say to them about that search?
First thing I would say is make sure you have a viable business before you talk to them. They go through hundreds, thousands of applicants and pitches and things, and concentrate on making a business, not trying to live up to the expectation of pitches and all those books about how to pitch VCs and all things like that. Don't ignore them. It's good training for you, but concentrate on making a viable business.
Yeah. Would you at all direct them to the Midwest or Ohio where you are? Can you find viable investors in that space?
Yes and no.
Okay.
It really depends on what kind of startup you are. For example, Silicon Valley, everybody, tech haven of the world, a lot of people out there. But that's quickly changing here in Ohio, and the YBI is one of them. There's a lot of tech startups here happening, and there's a good pool of investment community starting to put themselves around it. So I definitely would put them in the Midwest. In fact, I think the next big wave of innovation is going to come right here. You're talking to the epicenter.
That's really cool. That's perhaps a broader topic that we can get into next time here on the show. What's coming up next for Pixie, and what should people be looking forward to in the next 2 or 3 months from you guys?
Boy, we've got some really amazing things starting to come out. The folks have done an amazing job. We're going to have some updates rolling out here shortly. To really help the online experience. We're going to start talking more to the marketplace about why we're here, how we're doing it, and more importantly, what we're going to do to help the everyday mom, the everyday consumer, plan out their purchases and meet their budgets and get going.
Cool, man. Well, look, thank you very much for calling us from Youngstown, Ohio. It's probably the first time we've done that. Also, the next time you're on the show, if you're ever in the studio, I'd like you to bring the Surface 2 because we'll take a drill down and look at how perhaps maybe your stuff works on that one day. So without further ado, thanks very much, Scott. I really appreciate you taking the time. I wish you the best of luck, and we'll look for you at pixie.com, all right?
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.